This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. Many of us are still reading, given everything going on, a free downloadable intro economics textbook. It's part of our Econ Extra Credit project, where we revisit basic economics every week. From the chapter on how companies set prices, a word about what is called price discrimination in the age of coronavirus. Price discrimination can be bad, but it's also good, such as when older people get cheap admission to movie theaters, same good or service, different prices for different people. Now, consider eBay now, where sellers are offering packs of toilet paper at inflated prices, given the bare shelves in some stores. Many of these sellers are presumably profit-seeking scalpers who grab the toilet tissue early. When stores can't use some of this price discrimination, when demand surges, because in an emergency we call that price gouging, one consequence is this scalping, a so-called secondary market. Now, some see quote-unquote efficiency in letting stores or scalpers jack up prices for toilet paper to whatever people might be willing to pay, but one of our guides for our reading, Barnard College econ professor Homa Zargami, says you do have to account for income inequality. Homa, welcome.
Hello.
All right, price discrimination is not always evil?
No. So price discrimination is just the practice of charging different prices for the same product. We encounter it all the time. If we see a sale, if we see coupons, if the price is different for seniors or students at a movie theater than it is for adults, all of that counts as price discrimination. I think the place we're most accustomed to that and kind of work around it is with flying. We kind of all know that if you try to buy a ticket in advance, it'll be cheaper than if you buy the day of, or if you're trying to fly somewhere, you might want to avoid holidays because it's going to be more expensive. But all of that counts as dynamic pricing.
I mean, there could be price discrimination that's absolutely bad, like charging different amounts because of your religion or race.
Absolutely. But we still have at times different prices for men and women if there's a ladies' night, and that gets by as okay, I guess. So, but yeah, absolutely. There's price discrimination that's bad. There's price discrimination that's illegal. And then there's kind of run-of-the-mill price discrimination that is okay, or at least is considered legally okay.
Now, you and I are talking during this moment in history, coronavirus. I've been reading that a little price discrimination might be useful here, because if you could jack up the price of the toilet paper as the demand surges, you'd still have some toilet paper on the shelves.
Yeah. So the problem is when the price remains low, you're going to have people hoard, for example, toilet paper. The shelves then remain empty for others, and that's considered a problem. It's like the toilet paper has been effectively, in some sense, taken off the market. Now, the hoarders, what were they doing? They wanted to sell the toilet paper on a secondary market, and what they would do is probably equivalent to what dynamic pricers would do. They would increase the price to what people were willing to pay, and so. In some ethical sense, if it's them doing it versus the store itself doing it, I don't know how much of a difference there is there.
Well, it's a little bit like ticket scalping, only with toilet paper.
Exactly. The question then is, with dynamic pricing, is it the theater that charges the higher price, or is it some scalper who charges the higher price?
You could just imagine a future textbook with a little graph explaining to the economic students that if they would just raise the price of the toilet paper at the retail store, that would be somehow a more efficient an allocation of toilet paper during this time of need. However, an outsider might look at that and go, well, that's just price gouging.
Yeah, and I don't know that they're wrong. So the model of price discrimination, it actually predicts that you're going to sell the same number of rolls of toilet paper as you would if you had a perfectly competitive market. It's just a matter of what price the buyers are paying. But the concern that people have is that a secondary market is going to arise. And I guess my question there would be, what's the difference between a secondary market that's selling the good at really high prices and engaging in price discrimination versus the store doing it to begin with? Now, that's not my argument for price discrimination, but it's maybe my argument for saying that if the problem is resale markets, then maybe we should be more concerned about resale markets than about what price the producer is charging to begin with.
And there also may be an equity issue, right? Because if you start raising the price as demand surges for, say, toilet paper, then wealthy people can pay and poorer people have more trouble. And that's why we have this first come, first serve system usually in stores for toilet paper.
Yeah. And of course, that's revealing something that's already true in markets, which is that your willingness to pay determines whether you're going to get the good to begin with. But what gets lost in a lot of this talk is that the term willingness to pay makes it in some sense sound like we're all starting with the same amount of money. And so our willingness to pay is a good indication of how much we actually want something. And that gets very distorted when you have inequality, because really what willingness to pay is your willingness and ability to pay. And so somebody with much higher income will always be willing to pay more because they're able to pay more.
Homa Zarghami, professor of economics at Barnard College. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you. My pleasure.